Welcome to the Underwater Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of underwater portrait photography, cinematography, and everything in between. With me, your host, Brett Stanley. Welcome back to the Underwater Podcast. And this week, I'm talking to landscape photographer turned underwater photographer, Adam Attoon. Based in Redding, California, Adam talks about his background in landscape photography and how he's brought many of those techniques and aesthetics into his underwater portrait work. We dig into his process, how he gets such a unique look to his photographs, and how the Northern California weather really limits his shooting days. All right, let's dive in. Adam, welcome to the Underwater Podcast.
Well, thanks sincerely for having me.
It's great to have you here. I've been watching your work for the last few years, and I'm just blown away by the quality and the uniqueness of it. How did you kind of start in the underwater world? Was that something that you'd always wanted to do, or is it just something that you stumbled across? What was your kind of entry into it?
Well, I always prefer taking pictures, and generally I shoot conventional portraits or landscapes. But where I live, it's extremely hot during the summer, so there's not much in the way of landscape photography, and it's pretty much too hot to take conventional portraits. So I was just sitting in my pool one day,
right,
and just the idea popped in my head. You know, I had seen a few underwater pictures prior, but I really didn't know anything about it.
Did you have an affiliation with water beforehand, or was it just something where you were like, oh, I wonder what this is going to be like if I take the camera under the water?
I've always preferred being in the water. I swim prior to work every morning, enjoy summers in the pool. But no, I'd never thought prior about taking underwater portraits. You know, like I said, I had seen a few portraits prior, but didn't really think much of it. Didn't think about the technique, didn't know who the photographers were. And it just popped in my head, hey, it's something I can do during the summer.
Yeah, that's perfect. How long ago was that? Like, how long have you been just shooting underwater for at this point?
Oh, gosh, let's see. It's been about 8 years now. But generally, I can only shoot during the summer and primarily during the month of July. So in theory, you could say I've been shooting for 8 months now.
But, right, yeah. Because okay. Whereabouts are you? You're in California somewhere.
I'm in far northern California in a small town called Redding, which is about 2.5 hours north of Sacramento and about 3 hours from San Francisco.
Oh, okay. And is it high in the mountains or something? You have such a short amount of summer. You must be somewhere.
No, summer lasts. It's just that where I live specifically within Redding, my pool just doesn't stay as warm as I prefer. But in terms of elevation, no, we're nestled at the foothills of some mountain ranges. So it does get quite hot here during the summer. I think just given the location, the geography, the air tends to settle. The sun is quite intense. So we can sometimes reach, you know, upwards of 110 plus degrees for over a week or two.
Oh,
which
right.
is nice for the pool. But even when the temperatures are around 95, I'm a big wimp when it comes to cold water.
Right.
So my pool is never warm enough for me. But yeah, when it's 110, it's great.
Oh, okay. Is your pool kind of heated, or is it just heated from the sun?
No, it's heated from the sun. And within Redding, I live in sort of somewhat of an elevation, if you would consider it. So my pool probably, and it's pretty deep because it has a diving board. And when you have a diving board, there's a code. It has to be a certain depth.
Yeah.
And so it just, you know, I don't have an actual heater, rely solely on the sun. And it's so most people can tolerate it. I can tolerate it. And it's great when you've been out working in the yard, whatever, you want to cool off. It's great in that regard. But yeah, I'm just a big wimp.
Yeah, no, I get it. Totally. We used to live in an apartment building and it had a pool that was only heated by the sun. And I think because it was in the middle of the apartment building, it only got the sun like 3 hours a day. And it was always cold. It was just freezing. So I totally understand. I have a pool now that is gas heated, and it means that I can shoot all year round. So I totally understand the you know, being not having that would really limit your kind of season of shooting.
It limits it, but I'm also grateful because in truth, I don't think I'd want to shoot all year. I prefer landscape photography, and so I can devote more time to landscapes in that sense. And it helps concentrate my sessions throughout, for shorter duration of the season.
Yeah, so that's how you prefer to work. You'd rather do like just set aside a month to shoot, you know, an amazing amount of content and kind of work on that and then kind of be done. You like that kind of compartmentalizing?
Exactly, I do. Like I said, I think my true passion, at least at this point, at least, is landscape photography. Conventional portraits, I fit in, you know, most of the year outside of summer, and they just kind of fall in between my landscape sessions. But yeah, no, I generally prefer just separating underwater from everything else.
How do you go with the editing and stuff? Do you kind of spend like a month shooting everything and then you edit for the rest of the year, or are you kind of trying to fit the editing in as much as possible as well?
I've always prided myself on the ability to give people their pictures very quickly. Yeah. So generally speaking, I try to shoot and then edit, shoot, then edit. It doesn't always work out that way. Oftentimes I have back-to-back sessions one evening after the next. And so I can't always get to editing, but it's not uncommon that I have a week or two of vacation from work during the summer, in which time I can devote a lot of time to editing. I usually get caught up during that period.
And your editing process is, it seems like it's quite a chunk of your work, because your images are so polished and so produced, I guess, for lack of a better word. Do you spend a lot of time in the editing suite?
Yes and no. It just depends on the given situation. It depends on my mood, depends on the original image, depends on the subject, how comfortable they are in the water.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of variables regarding post-processing in that regard.
And what are those kind of variables? Like, are you getting any feedback from the models or from the clients in terms of what they want as the end result? Or is this kind of a more of an artistic process for you in terms of what the end result looks like?
I generally don't have a preconceived idea of what the images are going to look like. There have been one or two occasions when I've tried to adhere to a certain theme. But in general, I pretty much randomly throw on fabrics, get the person in the pool, and we get what we get. And rarely is anything actually planned. I've had a few people bring certain outfits that they want to try. And oftentimes those are themed. And so those are somewhat pre-planned, but more on their part. I generally don't know in advance what I'm going to be doing.
And do you like to work that way? Do you kind of like not knowing what's going to happen?
That's a good question. I think I get satisfaction on the rare occasions when I know in advance what I want to do. I think when I don't have a specific agenda, you know, and I don't get me wrong, I do like the randomness of everything. But by the same token, I do enjoy specific ideas. In fact, I do have one idea just popped in my head from a Facebook post. I forgot. It was a recent post.
Right.
And somehow I got on the topic of the rock band Kiss, which was my favorite rock band as a kid. And to this day, I don't want to change the topic here, but in any event.
No, it's good. Yeah.
The idea came to me to do an underwater Kiss shoot with four subjects wearing Kiss makeup. I think that would be pretty neat for me.
Yeah. And is that kind of where your inspirations come from? Is it just kind of random stuff that kind of pops in and you're like, let's try this underwater?
No, not really. I think at this point, honestly, I'm lacking inspiration. I feel like I've lost a lot of my creativity. I learned through experimentation with no specific ideas in mind. Generally, I would just try different things at first. And over time, you know, I just, you know, perfected my current technique to the point now that everything is relatively routine. In the beginning, it was a lot of fun given the experimentation and the continuous learning. I think it would be nice to come up with some specific ideas. At this point, I don't have many. So I often tend to rely on my subjects if they have a specific idea. Otherwise, if they don't, then it's pretty much going to be status quo. I'm going to put them in a dress. I'm going to drape some fabrics around them, throw them in the water, and then we see what we get.
Right. Yeah. So you kind of go back to your standard process. You know, you're not inspired to push yourself out of that box, I guess. Do you find that, because you do a lot of landscapes, do you find that the difference between the landscapes and say the like this underwater studio work, that you're, because you're kind of stuck with that studio, do you find that the shooting in the studio kind of forces you to be more creative, which takes more energy, as opposed to when you go and shoot landscapes, because the landscape is already there in the studio, you have to kind of, I guess, bring everything in if you want to have a different look to it.
I see. Yeah.
Do you find that there's that one's a little easier than the other?
I think they're both difficult in their own right. I think that, again, at this point, underwater for me is pretty routine. I don't tend to bring a lot of props and whatnot into the water. You know, a lot of photographers, you in particular, I strongly admire for your ability to create these elaborate underwater sets, which I unfortunately just, I don't think I have the patience nor the time. You know, I tend to work Monday through Friday, and so I can't devote as much time, for example, to the pool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm constantly taking care of and cleaning the pool. And so if I were to build a big set in the water, then it would be hard for me to just leave it there because, you know, things move around in the water when I'm not there. And again, time-wise, it would be pretty difficult for me to find that type of time. But I do admire your in particular ability to create these sets. They're magical. I wish I had that, you know, and it's not my style, to be honest, at least at this point.
Yeah.
I'm doing what I do. I've created my own sort of niche in terms of a style. And, you know, although it's routine for me, I continue to do it in part because a lot of people, you know, they request it. And so I'll continue producing as long as people want it. From my standpoint, it would certainly help to evolve. Compared to landscape photography, there are infinite possibilities in terms of what can be shot underwater. You know, landscape, like you said, you've got a few different angles, you've got light. Now, the difference with landscape is you have infinite locations you could theoretically shoot from. Again, I don't always have the luxury of traveling everywhere I'd like to go. But yeah, there are huge differences between landscape photography and underwater. Underwater is different from pretty much any other type of photography or modeling from that standpoint. Every model I've shot said it's different from everything they've ever done. So yeah, it's very difficult to compare underwater with most other types of photography. I think there is some similarity to studio work in the sense that you're using, or in my case, at least I'm using strobes, and you sometimes have to worry about lighting angles, quality of the softness or the harshness of the light, shadows and whatnot. So I guess you could equate it somewhat to conventional studio portraiture, but otherwise it deviates far from it.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's kind of, so my journey, it seems a lot like yours in terms of I started, you know, shooting landscapes and I love shooting landscapes, but I don't really do much of that anymore. But then I transitioned into the underwater studio work. And for me, what I found was the reason that I loved landscapes so much was because all I needed to do was kind of turn up and nature had done everything for me. I just needed to get the right timing and, you know, then I could make something beautiful out of it. Whereas with the underwater studio work, for me, I find that I have to bring everything in. So that's why I tend to build these sets and kind of do stupid stuff under the water with things that don't belong there. Because I'm trying to, I guess, get the complexity of a landscape, but trying to do that in a studio sort of situation. For me, especially underwater, I love shooting underwater open water, like in the ocean or in springs and that sort of stuff, because the landscape photographer in me loves that landscape. And all I'm doing is putting a model in there and trying to bring those two things together. So it's interesting that you've come the same way, but you kind of like to keep the studio stuff more simple and a little bit more controlled, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love shooting in natural bodies of water. I'm very limited where I live. I've got a couple lakes, and then any clear water is extraordinarily cold. And I've already alluded to the fact that I'm a wimp when it comes to cold water. Yeah. So I think the dream would be to go to like Thailand or Hawaii or Florida. There are some beautiful underwater landscapes there, and the water is much more temperate. I think that would be ideal. But for now, I'm pretty much limited to the pool.
So looking at your landscape work, and I know that's kind of where you came from, the lighting aesthetic, and your landscapes are beautiful. Like, you know, my landscape work is nothing like what you create. You create these beautiful, almost fantastical, hyper-real scenes from these landscapes. It's more akin to what you feel when you're there than what you actually maybe see. But it feels like you've brought those aesthetics into your underwater work as well.
Yeah, I think my eye is, you know, I see things a certain way. And so I think that is brought out in the style of my processing or lighting and in the way I treat my landscapes. I just try to create images for visual impact to be truthful. It's not necessarily something I might be feeling at the time. I can assure you there's not much joy in standing in, you know, minus 10 degree weather shooting snow in the, yeah, to 5 in the morning or whatnot. So yeah, I generally strive for visually appealing images, regardless of, you know, what I might be feeling at the time. Oftentimes, right, it's quite uncomfortable, yeah, totally, even underwater.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if the water's a bit too cold.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's interesting because it's, you know, I shoot the same way. Like I don't tend to try and tell a story. I don't try and tell the viewer what to feel with an image. I tend to create something that is visually pleasing and then kind of look at it later on and think, how do I feel looking at this now? Whereas a lot of other photographers will work the other way around. They'll come up with a story or a concept, and they'll want to bring that concept through the imagery to kind of inform the viewer of what they're trying to convey. Whereas for me, I feel like I'm just opening it up. It's more like a poem, I guess, than an essay. You know, I'm not trying to influence people. I'm more interested in what they see in it rather than what they think I saw in it.
Absolutely.
Does it feel that way for you as well? Are you kind of less interested in what your feeling was at the time and more interested in what the viewer feels from it?
Yeah, I might, you know, it's kind of like music, you know, people interpret songs different ways, or poetry, any type of art in reality. So this is no different in that sense. I might, you know, create an image. And again, I don't necessarily have a preconceived notion of what I want this meaning or want the image to mean or what I'm going to be doing in advance. But after the fact, I'm not usually trying to tell stories with my pictures, but on occasion you can, you know, based on the model's facial expressions, pose, the way that everything flows or the lighting, you can create somewhat of a story or a meaning behind a particular image. And it's always interesting to see other people's take on what I might perceive it to be.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's the thing with posting things on social media is you do get people's response to it. You do get people's kind of interpretation of it. And I really love when people write that stuff on my images, for example, kind of their interpretation of it. And it's something like, oh, I never even thought of that. I didn't even, that's not something I would have gone to. Where do you get your inspiration from? Is there something that gave you this kind of visual style that influenced this?
You know, my style, I would say, has evolved over time. And, you know, historically, I was always a purist in terms of photography. I would take a picture and that's what it was, you know, but now I tend to devote more time to the computer. Even back in the film era, I would use various techniques within in the dark room while processing my images. And that's in a sense comparable to Photoshop nowadays. It's just, again, things have evolved to the point where we're all using Photoshop. So I've transitioned to Photoshop, to digital, obviously. So my style has evolved in that sense. I've seen, and it started primarily with landscapes because, you know, landscape photography, there's been a movement over the years from a puristic type of style to more of an artistic type of style in terms of processing. One of my favorite photographers for landscapes is a guy named Ryan Dyer, who hugely influential in my style of landscape photography. I don't try to emulate him per se, but I've learned a lot just in terms of his way of thinking that made me look at my images differently, maybe look at a specific scene differently. And so based on my vision for landscapes, my processing evolved over time, and that translated into my processing for underwater portraits as well. So lighting for me has always been crucial in any type of photography, including conventional portraits. But the way a scene is lit landscape-wise, I often tend to try to emulate that underwater in terms of backlighting or directional light.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've noticed coming through, because a lot of your landscapes and your underwater have very much a definite light source.
It's funny because I'll go out photographing with my buddies, and my style for landscape photography generally is photographing into the light. In other words, my camera's pointing toward the sun or the horizon as the sun sets or rises. And it's not uncommon my buddies will be looking a different direction. And I'm like, no, you know, I can't shoot that. I've got to face the sun.
And yeah, so yeah.
The exact same thing can be said about underwater. I like to have, you know, light in my picture. I do use natural light, in which case, obviously, things aren't quite as directional. It's directional in the sense that it's strictly coming from above. But when I employ the use of my underwater strobes, then I can have much more directionality and, you know, just various lighting intensities and whatnot, which is generally what I prefer. Some of my natural light images I do like a lot, but generally I prefer the ones with the strobes because I have more control and I can employ the use of my usual landscape style in terms of the light. And I often tell people, and I have a general routine right now that I utilize when photographing people. For example, I'll start in the deep end. Maybe I'll put in a backlight, then I'll go to the shallow end. Then I'll turn on the strobes toward the end as it gets darker. And I tell people these are generally going to be the best shots. And at least for my style, those are definitely the shots that I tend to prefer from any given session. And again, it's not that there are several natural light pictures that I very much like that I've taken. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just my style tends to gravitate toward artificial light, or at least mimicking, you know, the sun in some senses.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that when the ambient light is getting darker and your strobes are starting to be more prominent, you feel like those are the better shots.
I tend to enjoy that the most. And I've gotten great shots, in my opinion, from the use of no lights. And I do use strobes even when the sun is still out. So generally, I tend to start my sessions close to sunset, usually around 6 p.m.-ish or so.
Yeah.
And then I tend to just have the person, I'll start without any lights at all, just to kind of get the person warmed up. And the sun is pretty, you know, intense. The way my pool is situated, I'm rarely shooting in the actual sunlight. So that's in part why I start in the deep end for any given session, because it's in the shade at that point. And so I'll tend to have the model swim around in the beginning with no lights, because there's a lot more flexibility. Once I start bringing the lights in the water, then they have to be a little more disciplined in terms of the way they approach, you know, swimming and whatnot. They have to stay, ideally, they would block the light with their body, because I don't know if you use backlight often, but if a strobe points directly into the camera, it's pretty much an unusable image in that case, because it blows everything out.
Yeah. So that's your kind of your, when you've got that strobe, underwater strobe, sort of on the back wall of the pool or whatever, you're having them block it with their body so that they basically absorb the light, and it just gives them those like a rim, and depending on how much particulates in the water, it gives them that, those kind of what we call God rays, I guess, sort of coming out and the lighting up the fabric and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. And it's hard for them to control themselves often. So that's in part why I let them swim around prior with no lights at all, because it's much, much more forgiving in terms of what they do. But once they, and I've had the best, you know, underwater models that I've ever shot prior still have difficulties trying to stay in one spot. And I understand it's difficult. I don't criticize, because it's extremely difficult modeling underwater, especially if they have their eyes closed. So I tend to just move left to right with the model, you know, opposite the model, to try to keep the backlight between them and the camera. And oftentimes I'm successful. Sometimes I'm not fast enough because they're close to the light. So if they move 2 inches, I'll have to move 2 feet, you know, so
yeah,
you have to
right.
be pretty fast at times.
Totally.
But yeah, I definitely try to keep the light out of the direct camera view.
And that's definitely the thing, right? As being a photographer, I think, is being able to move yourself to get the right shot. You know, it's not always about the model moving around and you're just stationary. It is, for me especially, a lot of the time is me having to swim quickly from one side of the pool to the other to get that angle that's going to make that shot work, because the model's moved a little bit. And so you're trying to compensate for that.
Absolutely.
So in terms of your lighting setup, I don't know if you mind sort of breaking down a little bit of how you do light these images. I know, you know, we have a light behind the model. Is the rest of it just the ambient light coming from above?
So I it really varies. Sometimes I use ambient light above and then a backlight. Sometimes I'll use two, even three lights. Generally, I prefer when I'm using more than one light, I prefer the main light source to come from the outside the pool, from the top side, yeah, pointing down. And I tend to use a soft box for that, or sometimes an umbrella, just to spread the light out. And again, this is just my style. There's no wrong or right way, obviously, of doing it. But lighting really varies. It just, sometimes I'm in the mood to try to experiment a little bit. Sometimes I'm in the mood to, you know, create more of a, nothing compared to you, for example, but more of an elaborate setup for what I'm used to. I might bring, you know, light stands and umbrellas or whatnot into the actual water, underwater, yeah, and play more like a conventional studio in that sense. But I want to emphasize the fact that the person is underwater. And so in real life, you know, the main light source generally comes from top side. You know, in real life, you're going to have bubbles, you're going to have reflections. So I always strive for including the reflections and the bubbles and create that top light source. But obviously, when you're using more than one light, then and natural light is considered a main light, in my opinion. But anytime you introduce a light into the water itself, you know, it's not natural anymore, which, and that's fine, obviously. I'm not seeking natural light portraits per se. In any event, lighting just varies. I have my style that I prefer, and that's great because I can rely on that. It's also nice to try different lighting techniques. It really alters the effect of an image, the way you light it.
Oh, totally. I think one of the things that strikes me about your images is that you do have, you know, these directional light sources that are very obvious, like the one from behind and possibly one from above. But the rest of the image seems to be very softly lit and very well lit. You know, there's no, it feels like the front light is very much, you know, a very large soft light source, which just gives such a contrast to the hard light sources coming from behind. It's beautiful.
Thank you. And that's dependent in part on how bright the ambient light might be. I shoot, like I said, I start around 6. And so there's still quite a bit of light in the sky. And it's just balancing strobes with the natural light in that case. But as the evening progresses, I'm relying solely on the strobes. And then I'm generally dealing with harsher light with greater shadows. But I've always preferred that. I've generally preferred that sense of lighting, even in my conventional studio portraits when using strobes. And to an extent, outdoors when using strobes. With outdoors, again, it depends if you're shooting at night or prior to darkness. But definitely regarding studio, when you have complete control over every aspect of the lighting. It's similar when you're shooting in the darkness underwater as well, because you're not relying on any ambient light for any fill or anything like that.
Yeah.
So things progress as my sessions progress with time in terms of the natural ambient light. And I'm used to that, so I've kind of dialed it in how I want to approach it.
And I think that's great too, that you have that kind of, over the session, you have that change of lighting, which, you know, in one session gives you a few different kind of looks as well, and a few different options in terms of the actual visual style.
You know, you brought up an important point that I think I'd like to address. And that is, I oftentimes don't allow people wardrobe changes during a session. The problem with that is that they could easily end up with, you know, 5 or 6 of the exact same look, right, in terms of the finished product. And so I often will light things and use different backdrops or digital backdrops or whatnot, just to create more of a variety for the actual subject.
Right.
That way they don't end up with 5 of the exact same pictures. I like them to get quite a variety. If I had my way, each picture would be different, and they tend to be. Like I said, I call them stations in my pool. At 6 p.m. I'll start in the deep end, no lights. Then I might throw in a backlight. Then I'll go to a backdrop that I might have in the water. Then I might go to the shallow end with natural light. Then I go to the shallow end with strobes and whatnot. So I have these stations throughout the evening, and each station is a different look, and yeah, because it's lit differently. And so at the very least, people are going to have 5 different looks, because that's how many stations I tend to use. And so the only thing that doesn't change in that sense is their wardrobe. And it's not even uncommon that I change colors of the wardrobe just to, again, give them that variety.
Yeah, see, I think that's a great way of doing it because, you know, costume changes and that sort of stuff, you know, it takes time. And especially if you're not using assistants, you know, changing things up, even lighting wise, can take time because you've got to get out of the pool, you've got to change things around. But having the ability to change the location and the lighting setup can totally change the feeling and the look of that image dramatically. So
very much so, yeah.
Like what you're doing is almost recycling or upcycling, I guess, every image to something different. I do a very similar thing in my pool as well. You know, I have a shallow end, I have a deep end, you know, and there's all these different corners and you get to know your pool. You know, you get to know if I set this here and do this, you know, I'm going to get something very different to that. And that's going to work for this particular outfit. It's going to look really good. So I feel like you kind of can dial things in and mix things up without really moving too far.
And that's one benefit. You kind of alluded to it earlier, how, you know, everything's right there for you. It's not, you know, with landscapes, you, or even traveling to shoot like in exotic locations underwater, you're traveling and you've got to bring everything with you. Whereas when you're photographing in your pool, everything's right there for you, which is really convenient. And in your case, you know, with all your big setups, I mean, you couldn't do that necessarily, at least not easily, I think. I don't know, in Florida, for example.
No, I mean, I'd like to try, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. And that's why I love underwater studio photography so much, because it does. And I hated studio photography above water, as in, you know, by the way, like I had a studio back in New Zealand when I was starting out, and I kind of hated it because it was boring and I just didn't really like it. I liked taking people out into landscapes and shooting them in the real world. Whereas now underwater here, the underwater studio has something different. I still can't kind of work out what it is. I mean, I know it's water, but the difference that it makes just by filling the studio full of water, you know, it gets me so excited to shoot in there every day. Whereas shooting in a studio above water, I think I would struggle to get the same kind of excitement.
Yeah, I totally understand.
And I think it's just down to, you know, working out those different things. Like I love the reflection. I love bubbles. I love the texture of the water. I love what water does to the light when it comes through, you know, and it's just things you couldn't do anywhere else.
That's exactly true. I gotta interject here, Brett, that I'm a huge fan of yours. I think your work is top notch. It's unique. It's just, you know, I don't try to mimic other people. I try to adhere to my own style and create my own niche, but I think I'm in strong admiration of your work.
Oh,
as I know
you.
A lot of people are, you have a huge following and for good reason.
I appreciate that.
Just,
man,
a little side note there.
Thank you. This is when I get coy and blush. But it's the same with your work, man. I've never seen anything like this underwater before. The way you light it and the way you work with fabrics and the way you get these poses out of these models is just incredible. And the way you process it as well, your post-processing is believable, which I think is the most important way of editing. There's, you know, there's so many different ways of post-production. The one that's most important to me is having something that is believable. And yours is. I know you do different things with backdrops and all sorts of stuff, but I never look at it and go, oh, that's what he's done. You know, usually I look at your work and go, this is incredible. Like, it's seamless to me. So
thank you.
That is in itself, that is a massive skill.
Well, I try to, I mean, it's ideal when things are as natural as possible. I think one of the biggest things I strive for in my images is the sense of flow. And so I'll often instruct models to move underwater in a way that, you know, augments that sense of flow. Some people have obviously a more difficult time. I'm sure you're used to that as well. Some people will submerge and they can't really swim around. They might like strike a specific pose and just kind of hold it underwater. And that's fine. Oftentimes though, it's not what I'm seeking. It oftentimes what I'm looking for is motion underwater. And so I oftentimes will tell them, hey, just go under and just kind of swim around. Try to stay in place, but just twist around, go back and forth, bob your head sideways, left and right to create that movement in your hair. You know, and that's generally what I prefer. And not a lot of people can necessarily do that. I've had a few people that, you know, just have extreme command of themselves and the fabrics underwater, and it's not easy, but that's generally what I strive for. So you add that with intriguing lighting, and then that's, you know, that's what I prefer, you know, that's what I try to achieve regarding a sense of style is flowetry and lighting, motion and light.
Flowetry. What an amazing word. I've used that word
from the beginning of time.
That is so good.
Flowetry in motion.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally exactly what I'm getting from your work is that, and I had seen maybe early on, I'd seen some videos that you'd done of your models and just them kind of gyrating and sort of swirling in the water. And I was just like, oh my God, how does he shoot that? Because it is the exact opposite of what I'm trying to get my models to do.
And Brett, I should interject here and say that, first of all, I don't shoot underwater videos anymore. But when I did, I had a completely different set of instructions for the models.
Right.
It was totally different from stills. With video, I'd say move and move fast, blow as many bubbles as you can. Okay. Completely different than stills.
Right. Okay.
I say swim, but swim, don't swim too fast when you're shooting stills.
So I think that's the other thing is how do you work with models? What sort of instruction are you giving them? Do you kind of coach them in terms of letting out their air to be able to sink? And like, do you give them a lot of direction or are you kind of just letting them do their thing and you're just documenting it?
Generally speaking, even the most awe-inspiring models require some form of instruction because they can't see exactly what I'm seeing. Everybody's different. It just depends on the individual. But I start each session with a set of instructions. Number one being facial expression. You know, I tell them I can control the lighting, I control the camera angles, but I can't control your facial expression. So that's the most critical. If they can get beyond that, then oftentimes we can create some form of usable images. But everybody's a little different. And pretty much, you know, in between each drop, I'm blabbering some type of request or command of whatnot. And oftentimes the same person will do, you know, that each person has their quirk. You know, one person might keep swimming toward you inadvertently. One person might keep going to the left. One person might be going too deep. So everybody has their thing that they have a hard time controlling. And even the most experienced of underwater models have similar quirks, but, you know, you work with it and you try to time your picture when they're in the exact spot and in the right pose.
How fast are you shooting? Are you someone who's very thoughtful and only shoots when things look good? Or are you kind of like shooting constantly the whole time to try and make the most of it?
I'm not shooting constantly, but I try to time it based on the fabrics, the pose, the hair. If I can, and then I'll take oftentimes 5 to 10 shots on any given breath hold in an effort to, you know, get the right image.
Yeah.
And usually it ultimately boils down to luck, you know.
Right.
You can't necessarily time. I mean, a fraction of a second can make all the difference in the world regarding a specific, you know, pose or a specific look.
Oh, absolutely.
So oftentimes you get what you get. But yeah, there are times when I can actually time it.
Right. Do you shoot plates as well? Do you shoot kind of bits of fabric and bits of hair or get the model to kind of hold something so you know you can use this piece later on to add in?
Yeah. So if I have a skilled underwater, you know, swimmer and I happen to be using a black fabric, I'll oftentimes take a minute to ask them to go as deep as they can and then blow some bubbles and I'll photograph just the bubbles.
Oh, yeah.
So that I can superimpose those bubbles onto other images.
Do you make brushes out of the bubbles for, or do you just literally sort of cut and paste the bubbles themselves?
I have a decent sized repository of bubble images that I tend to superimpose or overlay on an image. And I use the bubbles. It's not uncommon where I'll actually remove the original bubbles and then add my own.
Right.
And I add them oftentimes for three reasons, I guess. One is just to fill in blank spaces that I feel aesthetically an image might be lacking. You know, maybe there's an empty space that needs something there to fill it in.
Yeah.
That might be one reason. Another reason is to, again, emphasize the fact that the person is underwater. And then finally, sometimes I use bubbles to conceal errors. Sometimes you have wardrobe errors, for example.
Oh, right.
So yeah. I can use bubbles to cover those types of things up.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And it's not always, oftentimes I do, but not always. Sometimes I go with what's there if it works.
Yeah. So the shots to me are very kind of, they have this very painterly kind of look to them. Like it is very much, you know, has that classic painter kind of thing. Is that something that you have strived for? Are you inspired by, you know, classic painters, or is it just something that has evolved organically?
That's a direct translation from my landscapes. That's where it started, was with my landscape photography that sort of carried over into the underwater world. It's a similar sense of lighting, that ethereal type of atmospheric look. And yeah, I do strive for that oftentimes, not always. But when I bring out the strobes and I have greater control, like I said, of the lighting, oftentimes I light it specifically so that I can achieve that effect.
Because there's something about it. And the more I look at your images, the more I kind of realize that you don't really do dark shadows. Like everything seems to be kind of lit. Like you don't
just seem depends to... on the, you know, as it gets darker, you know, in the evening and there's less ambient light and I have one strobe directly overhead and let's say a strobe behind.
Yeah.
Then I tend to get very strong shadows in those cases. And again, that's why the model will get several different looks in any given session, because the lights will change as the sessions progress. And usually we end up with pretty intense shadows as I use the overhead strobes. And it also depends on the light modifier. So if I use a smaller softbox, I tend to get harsher shadows. Conversely, obviously a wider, like an umbrella, for example, or a larger softbox will generally create softer shadows. And it just depends on the mood I might be in, or the model, or, you know, the effect I'm trying to achieve. So there's no wrong or right, you know, answer to that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a stylistic thing. You also have a day job. Like you work Monday to Friday. How do you go juggling all this and having another job?
Well, my work has changed a little bit. So now I do have more time specifically. You know, I'm a physician. And so I used to take call oftentimes at night during the week, and then not an infrequent weekend.
Yeah.
Our work structure has changed such that we're essentially no longer on call. And so I have more time in that regard, but I'm still busy throughout the day. And so, and often tired after work, by the way. So
yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to come home after a day of work and then have a 4-hour shoot ahead of you.
Totally.
But it's not easy, but underwater is just one of my forms of photography. So any form of photography can be difficult to juggle with the day job. I tend to go to medical conferences once or twice a year. And so I try to choose locations that would, you know, allow me the opportunity to shoot landscapes as well, depending on the time of year.
Oh, yeah.
So that's oftentimes how I get to travel for landscape photography. Otherwise, I'm limited to either when I'm on vacation from work or weekends, especially now that I have more weekends free, or depending on the time of year, you know, it's not uncommon I can shoot either before or after work in my area for landscape photography. But in terms of underwater portraiture, you know, now that I'm not on call, I can pretty much shoot Monday through Friday. All of my sessions tend to start around 6 p.m., regardless if I'm working or not.
Right.
So I've always been able to shoot even during the week, as long as I wasn't on call.
Oh, okay.
I guess now I have a little bit more time in that regard, but it's still time consuming, not to mention the editing process.
Yeah, totally. So how long on average would you spend on an image to get that finished?
It really varies. I mean, I can spend literally 10 minutes on an image. I can spend an hour, you know, 10 hours, I suppose, if I really wanted to. It just depends how crazy I want to get.
Yeah.
Some of these underwater composites that I've done tend to be the most time consuming when I'm changing backdrops. It's a lot of work, and it comes down, like I said, to just giving the model a variety of images. Not all images work for it, but yeah, those can take on the order of 1 or more hours. So
yeah,
it really varies. I don't like to spend more than 20 minutes on an image if I can help it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Especially if you've got a lot, you know, like getting through them all. How many images do you tend to deliver from a shoot?
I'll shoot between 600 to 1,000 generally. That's what I strive for. I always, you know, if I could get 600 images, I'd be pretty happy, because out of those 600, you know, you're lucky to get you know, I don't know, five. I tell the model, I'll get you five. I strive for five images.
Right.
And depending on their skill set, they may get more, they may get less. So I strive for five because I have five stations in my pool. And so I try to get one look out of, you know, each station. So
yeah,
that would be five. And if they get more, great. And that's why I might change the colors of the wardrobe. I might change the background or whatnot, just to give them even more. So really varies. But yeah, five is the ideal number, I think.
Yeah. As a photographer, I tend to not particularly like to have too many, I don't particularly like to deliver too many images that look similar. And I think you mentioned this before as well. So that if I get one image, one good image from one setup, I'm happy. Like, I don't need to have five images from the one setup. Do you feel the same way, or do you kind of like having similar images in there as well?
No, I pretty much loathe it. And that's why I don't, you know, when I post pictures, for example, in my own portfolio on the web, I don't like to put images of the same person that are identical. And that's with any form of photography. That's even with landscapes. I don't like having, you know, slight variations in a specific landscape scene, for example. So
yeah,
variety is the spice of life. Same can be said about, you know, portraits, I guess.
Yeah, totally. It always amazes me because I don't know how you do this process, but I have my clients actually choose the images that I edit. You know, that I let them give me a selection of images and then I edit those. And I'm always surprised at how many they send me back that are almost identical. And I just, I'm just like, if you just spent, like, you know, what is it about these two? I know sometimes it's hard to, you know, decide between two because you're, you know, maybe your face looks better in this one or your hand is a little different in this one. But it's, as a photographer, it irks me because it's like, these are almost identical.
It's funny how that works out, isn't it? I don't even let people look at the images prior anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I make the decision solely on my own.
Yeah. I just don't have the confidence. I think I see things very differently than my clients do. And I think I would choose images that they might not choose. So I would rather them, I guess, be at fault rather than me be at fault for choosing the wrong ones.
It takes a little more of the joy out of it from your standpoint, though, to have to, you know, cater to their subtle nuances in terms of what one image might look like over another. I don't get it either. Why? Yeah, maybe the smile is just a tad different in one picture. Otherwise, everything is identical. I don't want to process two identical images if I can help it.
No, just, exactly.
It just gets too boring in that sense.
Yeah. Well, in that case, I tend to go, okay, which, you know, what do you like in this image and what do you like in this image? And then I'll just make one image based on the two of them. You know, I'll comp the hand from that one into this one so that you end up with just one perfect image rather than two almost perfect images. Yeah. Adam, this has been amazing, man. Thank you so much for sharing your process and how this all works for you. It's amazing. It's such a beautiful work, and, you know, getting to hear you talk about it has been amazing.
Well, I'm honored that you would consider me for your podcast. I think this was a genuine treat for me.
Oh, it's a treat for me. Yeah, just, you know, I love catching up with people and meeting people and especially people whose work I admire. So this has been amazing.
Well, likewise.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, if you like the podcast, please subscribe, review, and share. If you'd like to support with the production of these episodes, you can purchase our very cool merchandise at theunderwaterpodcast.com. We've got branded coffee mugs, stickers, beer cozies, and posters featuring our amazing illustration and logo by Joe Hodenow. If you'd like to connect with us or learn more about our guests, you can reach us at theunderwaterpodcast.com or on Instagram. We also have a Facebook group where you can discuss the episodes and even get your questions answered by our guests. There's a link to it in the show notes. Also, don't forget about Waterproof Magazine, showcasing the best in underwater art. Read it online or purchase a print edition at waterproofmag.org. You can learn more about my underwater photography workshops and mentoring at brettstanley.com or Brett S. Photo on Instagram. The Underwater Podcast is presented and produced by me, Brett Stanley, and our music is Neo by Oh Boy. Keep creating, everyone. I'll see you in the water.